music can only mean one thing. You are tuned in, turned on, and locked on to an all-new episode of Sports Your Argument. I'm Casey Angel, one of your hosts, and joining me as always, the man who claims to be the curse of all things Cleveland, Matt Potter.
Whoa. I don't want to be responsible for cursing Cleveland, okay? That city is cursed plenty on their own. I mean, can you believe how that game ended last night?
We are putting some major juju on them if we have anything to do with what happened on Monday Night Football. That was an unbelievable finish.
Oh, man.
Man, look, we have a great show on tap for you guys. We're going to be talking NFL winners and losers, Kobe Bryant's frustration retirement, Jordan Zimmerman's breakup letter to our own Matt Potter, and so much more. But we're starting off with headlines from the world of college football. We might actually be heading toward a college football playoff that is without drama. That's right, without drama, without the second guessing of an angry number five team at some computer somewhere in the middle of the desert. If the favorites heading into the conference finals this weekend of the ACC and SEC win out, we would pretty much have a cut and dry top four of Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and the winner of this week's Michigan State-Iowa game. So, you know we like chaos around here at Sports Your Argument. Do you think that Clemson and Alabama can make it way too easy on all the computers, on all the coaches' polls, on everything, and win out this weekend?
Well, I think Alabama will definitely win, so I'm not too worried about that. It's Clemson who I'm really worried about. And the thing is that although they're the home team in this game because they have the better record, the game's located in North Carolina, so that really gives UNC the real home field advantage. So that's a little worrisome for me. But it's not like North Carolina is a slouch. They've won 11 straight games, and they're probably one of the most underrated teams in the country right now. So I think it could be a good battle, and I think North Carolina could pull the upset.
Ooh, I like the early bold predictions coming out right out of the gate here on Sports Your Argument. You're absolutely right. I've got Alabama winning big, winning easy over Florida. The Gators, frankly, they have a horrible offense, and unless they end up winning like 6-3 or 3-0 or something, I don't think that they're going to end up taking it from the Tide in the SEC championship. And I'm kind of following along the same path as you. On the flip side, I'm a big fan of UNC here. We talked about them 2 weeks ago on the last episode of Sports Your Argument. It's interesting when you see the tape of quarterback Marquise Williams for UNC the first couple games of the season compared to the last four or five. If you're looking at tape, this is a completely different guy. This looks like a man out there among boys. He's running the option. He's reading the defenses. He is doing an unbelievable job manning the offense. And out of nowhere, that UNC defense headed by Gene Chizik, they all of a sudden look like the best defense out there. So I think that when you're looking at this, when it comes right down to it, Clemson has a much harder path, comparatively speaking, to the Crimson Tide. So you're absolutely right. That looks like one of those things that could be a big stumbling block for the undefeated, number one ranked Clemson Tigers. Now, let's just go hypothetical here. If they do, and when I say they, I mean Alabama and Clemson, if they win out, is this the biggest possible victory for the quote-unquote four-team playoff system?
Yeah, I think so. It would really accomplish what they're trying to get out of this, and even better, really. I mean, they'd have four major conferences, all different, represented in the four-team playoff. I mean, outside of Alabama, you'd have fresh faces in the hunt for the national title, and I think that, it, at the end of the day, is exactly best case scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year was kind of the inaugural year. You know, it seems like we've been in this four-team playoff forever. I don't even remember when we were back in the 2+1 system. But last year was a huge mess. Everybody knows about the Baylor, TCU, all that big old controversy going into it. Although I think we still need to start looking at, you know, more of those big five teams being the norm there in the conference championships. But this certainly would be a huge victory for the four-team playoff. Definitely, like you were talking about, some fresh faces outside of Alabama. But you're right, it's going to be interesting to see if we do run with a Clemson and Oklahoma hasn't been there for a while. And then on top of it, Iowa could be that surprising team if they pull off the win against Michigan State. But that kind of brings me to my follow-up question here. The only undecided game outside of those, Iowa-Michigan State, kind of a pick'em there. Whoever wins probably going to fill out that top four in the Big Ten championship. So who do you got in that one and why?
Okay, well, Iowa would definitely be a good story. I'm going with Michigan State. Connor Cook, he's back. And although he's not 100%, he looked good in his return to the field last week. They have a much tougher schedule than Iowa. Iowa didn't have to play Ohio State. They didn't have to play Michigan or Oregon. So I think for that reason, Michigan State's just a better overall team. I think they're more battle-tested, and I think they're more adept to handle this type of game.
Man, battle-tested, you hit the nail on the head. You're absolutely right. Michigan State, they have those big-time credentials. And if they beat Iowa, man, they have four of the nicest wins on anybody's resume. You talked about Ohio State, which I think might be the best win of any of those top four teams over another very, very good team in their conference. And then on top of it, you talked about Oregon at the beginning of the year, and now Iowa, who's an undefeated team, if they're able to run the table basically here, and they only have that one fluky loss before. I mean, my goodness, they have some of the best wins of any of these top four teams. So I have to stick with Michigan State as well. Battle-tested, better stars on both sides of the ball. I picked them at the start of the year. I gotta stick with them. So I'm going with Michigan State here over Iowa. But man, what a season by these Iowa Hawkeyes. This is unbelievable that they've been able to go here. Nobody had them coming this far in the Big Ten, certainly not one game away from the playoffs. Now, let me ask you this. We're talking about the top four when it comes to Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, on and on. Outside of those top four or five teams that we've been talking about here for the first part of the segment, who do you think would have been the toughest, maybe in a hypothetical situation, outside of the top four or top five, that could have been the toughest team going into the playoff if they would have made it in college football?
Well, hypothetically, you have to look at Ohio State. They'd be pretty tough. I mean, I know that they kind of had a little cakewalk schedule for most of the year. But as the national champions, the defending champs, they'd be pretty good. Stanford, another team that would be right up there. But I have a little bit of a prediction for you. We were talking about UNC and Clemson. I predict that if UNC beats Clemson, they'll vault Ohio State. They'll vault all the other teams, and they'll get into the number four spot to lock in a playoff berth.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that one. I love that prediction, and certainly we're looking at the rankings, and these kind of rankings, and if we have that kind of chaos, you know, we were talking about how the top four could be cut and dry, the winner of Michigan State, Iowa, Oklahoma, Clemson, Alabama, on and on. That would be all nice and pretty and neat and orderly, but you're right. If UNC beats Clemson, I've got them going to the number four position. I think if Michigan State's able to beat Iowa, they're going to jump to number two, and then maybe Alabama takes that number one spot. Oklahoma sits at number three there if all that happens. Certainly some great hypotheticals. Back to the question at hand, who would have been the toughest team outside of the top four or five? I guess I have to go with Stanford. They're one of those teams that seem to play really good teams tough, but sometimes you don't know who's going to show up. Kind of a weird question, because it's very hard to determine what Ohio State was this year on top of it when you're looking at them. I know you've been a huge vocal critic of their schedule, and you're right. It's been filled with cupcakes and eclairs and Little Debbie's and whatever kind of snack cakes you have out there. But the fact of the matter is, I have no idea what Ohio State is this year. Are they the team that we saw run over Oregon in the playoff last year, or are they the team that just kind of struggled through the season and blew out some teams but kind of struggled with some mediocre opponents this year until they finally lost in one of the last weeks? I mean, who are they? I don't know who they are. I don't think that anybody can definitively say who they are. So it's hard to pick them as one of the toughest teams outside of the top four or five.
Now, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the thing about them is that they have all the pieces.
They do.
The components are there. They have the head coach, who's great. They have Joey Bosa, who's probably a top three pick in next year's NFL draft, rushing the passer. Their problem is that they have too many quarterbacks. I know JT Barrett is the guy in charge now, but they just have all the pieces. And Ezekiel Elliott, a great running back, Heisman candidate, but they just haven't been able to put it all together into one cohesive unit that was just the machine that they were last year.
Well, let me ask you a question, since we're on the subject. Ohio State, obviously, just a machine last year, especially the second half of the season. They steamrolled through the competition. Let me ask you this. Do you think that going back to the start of this year, when Urban Meyer was playing basically quarterback roulette with about three different guys, oh, you're playing here. I know that we have Barrett and we had Cardale Jones and on. Do you think that that really took a toll on the way that the team came together and when they started to play some of that tougher opponents later in the year? Do you think it took a toll on the team?
I mean, possibly just from a rep standpoint, but I think that that would be something that would affect Jones more than Barrett, just because Barrett's had the experience. He's a little bit longer tenured under center. But what I think it comes down to is that you win the championship and you get kind of lazy. I mean, they had so many players returning. I think they only lost a couple at the most from that team. So I think that they just thought that it was their birthright to get back into the playoffs. It's sort of like the Yankees in their prime. Well, the regular season didn't count. They're only playing, and the playoffs is when their season started. So I think that that lackadaisical attitude had somewhat of an impact. I don't think they were quite as sharp. I mean, you saw their win over Michigan. It was a legit win, but they had the pedal to the metal. Their backs were against the wall. And for that reason, I think that's what hurt them more than anything.
Yeah, I think that's a great point by you. Certainly, the psychology goes into it. A returning national champion, like you said, so many of those guys already had a ring on their finger. So where's the drive? Where's the hunger? I think that's where you're going with that, and I agree with you 100%. Now, outside of the national championship, one of the biggest trophies, obviously, on an individual level, is still very much up for grabs, and that's the Heisman Trophy. So we're handicapping the favorites down the stretch. So let me ask you, we're going 5 through 1, starting at number 5. Who are your top 5 Heisman hopefuls in college football right now?
Okay, well, at number 5, I have somebody who most people have as the top pick or number 2, and that's Deshaun Watson, the quarterback of Clemson that we just talked about. He's thrown for over 3,000 passing yards, 27 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. He's completed a whopping 70% of his passes, and just his dual threat nature. I mean, he has 756 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns through the ground. You know, he's having a great season, undoubtedly, but for me, he's number 5. Number 4, kind of the dark horse in the mix, not getting a lot of love, and I'm not sure why, but I'm looking at Matt Johnson, the quarterback of Bowling Green. Maybe I just answered my own question. It's because he's the quarterback of Bowling Green. But
that's what we like. We like the self-sufficient questions and answers. The other host doesn't even have to jump in there. You all got it by yourself, right?
Yeah. You know, I know how to feed myself. That's one of my many traits. But, I mean, look at this guy's stats. He's thrown for over 4,000 yards, 4,465 passing yards. He leads the nation. He has 41 touchdown passes to only 6 interceptions. He's completed 69% of his passes. This guy's numbers are off the charts. I'll be interested to see if that game translates at the next level. Number 3, I'm going with the front runner for 3/4 of the season at Leonard Fournette, running back out of LSU. He's still up there on my list. I mean, he has 1,700 rushing yards, 18 touchdown rushes. But I think the thing that's most impressive for me and the reason why he's such a valid candidate is because he's putting up those yards when he's the defense's primary focus. He's pretty much carried that entire LSU offense. So for that reason, he's still up there. Number 2, Baker Mayfield, quarterback of Oklahoma. This guy, I mean, he has been a huge reason why they're going to be a playoff team this year. Over 3,000 passing yards, 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and although he's primarily a pocket passer, this guy's done it on the ground as well. I mean, he has 420 rushing yards, 7 rushing touchdowns, tougher competition in the Big 12 than the ACC. That's another reason why I have him over Watson. And number 1, Derrick Henry, running back out of Alabama, almost 1,800 rushing yards, 22 touchdowns. And I think what sealed it for me is when he carved up Auburn in the Iron Bowl. 271 yards, a touchdown, and it just seems like they gave him the ball every single down, the whole game, and he just didn't tire. He was like the Energizer Bunny. He just kept going and going, and for that reason, he's my front runner.
That's a great top 5. You and I, we've got them mixed up a little bit here, but certainly hard to argue with Derrick Henry at number 1. At number 5, the only guy that you left off, I am going to go with Ezekiel Elliott. He would certainly get some Heisman Trophy contention for me. He was really good throughout the season. I believe he had 5 games of over 200 yards rushing. That's unbelievable. Number 4, Leonard Fournette. You talked about him. He's kind of dropped off a little bit here in the past couple weeks, but certainly he's a guy that everybody's keying on him. I mean, we've heard of, you know, 8-man fronts. I think when people play LSU, it's 11 and 12 man fronts if they're frankly trying to get away with it just to stop Leonard Fournette. So his 18 rushing touchdowns, 1,740 yards rushing, that's unbelievable. And number three, you're going to kill me for this one. I've got Derrick Henry at number three here just because he's got such a complete team around him in Alabama. I know that that's not something that I can take away from him, but when it comes to carrying the team, I've got number two, Deshaun Watson, the quarterback from Clemson. You talked about the 27 touchdowns passing, 9 touchdowns rushing, undefeated team. He ranks 9th in total offense per game with 331 yards from scrimmage. And then at number one,
I can't believe you're going to give it to Matt Johnson. That's so nice of you.
I'm going out on a limb. Bowling Green. Wait, that doesn't say Bowling Green on my notes at all, does it? Baker Mayfield. I think he might be the most entertaining player in college football right now. Quarterback from Oklahoma, a team that lost a really bad game to the Texas Longhorns about halfway through the season, and he absolutely turned it on and carried this team to huge victory after huge victory. And that was an intensely competitive Big 12 this year. Baylor was good. TCU was good. Oklahoma State was off the charts. And Oklahoma was able to navigate that minefield in the Big 12 thanks to his 35 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. That's unbelievable. 7 touchdowns rushing. You talked about it. So kind of a dual threat quarterback, but just the 3,300 yards passing is off the charts as well. So I'm going to have to go number one right now, Baker Mayfield out of Oklahoma. Is that the dramatic pause we like to hear after I just get that, done just rambling? You
know, I mean, I can't argue with that. And the thing is that he's a transfer there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where's this guy been hiding? And really, when you look at it, I think that he, out of everybody, might have running backs aside because they'll fit into pretty much any NFL system. But when you're looking at a quarterback, I think Mayfield comes out. I think he might have just vaulted himself into a top five draft pick this year.
I agree with you 100%. When we're looking at the draft, man, this is going to be a really interesting draft because obviously quarterbacks always at the premium when we have our NFL draft preview special here on Sports Your Argument. But you're absolutely right. He's going to be an interesting guy to see into the combine and see what team falls in love with him and what they do to try to get that kind of skill set onto their NFL franchise.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Big 12. I mean, they've been SEC-esque almost this year.
Yeah.
The SEC had I mean, I know that sort of iron sharpens iron, all those cliches, and you had the SEC just kind of whittling themselves down. But same thing with the Big 12. So impressive tip of the cap to the Big 12.
Man, that was a lot of cliches all in one. You tipped a cap, you had iron sharpening iron, and you were whittling down the competition like wood. That was really impressive. I felt like I was talking to like an 80-year-old Southern guy that's like, don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining, you know? Like, that was, man, I love that kind of colorfulness from Matt Potter. He is bringing his A game today.
It's like in Super Troopers with the meow thing. How many times can you say meow? How many cliches can you get in one segment?
Well, I feel like we should have one of our sports retorts where you and I just act like an NFL quarterback and we don't say anything. We just drop cliches on them like, oh, well, the opponents came to play and man, they sure do know their stuff. And we studied the tape and we gave it 110% out there. And our coach was behind us the whole time and the fans were behind. And you're like, but you didn't say anything. I love it. All right. Now we got to get into some head coaching changes before we hit the break here on Sports Your Argument. We've seen some head football coaches write their own endings in college football, like Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech, while others have gotten fired, like Georgia's Mark Richt. Now, this is just a precursor to what's always an interesting season, the offseason, with the coaching carousel. So let's start right there in Georgia. Mark Richt, do you think that he's going to be coaching college football next year? And if so, what do you think would be a good fit for the former Georgia Bulldog?
Oh, I absolutely think he's going to be coaching. He pretty much said as much at his exit interview, at his exit press conference. So, yeah, I think he's going to be coaching. I think Miami, right there in your backyard, is a perfect fit. It's essentially the same recruiting pool he had at Georgia. But, yeah, and if you look at his recruiting classes, he consistently had top 10 recruiting classes. That's a major upgrade for the recruiting classes that the U's gotten lately. And he doesn't have to deal with the gauntlet that is the SEC that we were just talking about. So I think if he went there, he would have overwhelming success.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a great pick by you. I think he will be. His record at Georgia was awesome, 145-51. at a school that acts like they win championships every year. They only have won 35 years ago. But you know what? The fact of the matter is that I think the ACC would be a great fit for him. You talked about Miami. I love the fit. The other team, watch out. Maybe Maryland Terrapins is another team who they have been able to recruit some good players in the past. They've had a few down years. Maybe he would be a good fit there, but you and I agree on maybe the ACC would be a great fit for Mark Richt moving forward from the SEC. Now, moving forward, Memphis head man Justin Fuente, he has been tabbed to replace Frank Beamer, we just talked about a couple minutes ago, at Virginia Tech. Do you like that fit with Fuente at Virginia Tech?
I do. Although Virginia Tech's not really known for their passion when it comes to football. I mean, everybody in my neck of the woods knows that their fans, their program, very passionate about their football. And I think what they're doing is they were looking for another long-term head coaching solution like Frank Beamer, who was there 31 years. But he really showed, and this is Fuente, is that he really showed that he has the ability to turn programs around. I mean, if you look at Memphis, he recruited the right talent. He was 7-17 his first 2 years, 19-6 the last 2 years. I think now at Virginia Tech, he'll have much more talent at his disposal. So I see good things in his future.
Yeah, I think it's a great fit. You're right. A young guy, up-and-comer, probably a long-term solution at Virginia Tech. You talked about it. That kind of recruiting that he has, all of a sudden the street cred just gets bumped up when you're talking about Memphis versus Virginia Tech. Just on name alone, I think that he gets even better players, and he's obviously going to be able to draw from the pools. There's a lot of great football talent out in the Virginia Beach area and Richmond and Washington, D.C., and so he's going to be able to draw from those areas of high school football players that he wasn't able to in Memphis. And really, let's be honest, Memphis is known as a basketball school, not a football school. So that's really going to boost his street cred immediately and really help out that recruiting and that talent pool like you were talking about. Now, let's kind of take a broader look here. What other major programs in college football do you think could be heading for coaching changes?
Well, this one that I have is kind of surprising even to myself. I'm looking at Gus Malzahn out of Auburn. They're only 6-6 this year. I know they were in the title game a couple years ago, but they didn't really capitalize on it. They haven't had the best recruiting classes. They haven't really done the most with what they have. SEC, very win-now conference. So I think Auburn's going to want to keep up with the Joneses, and I think they'll probably look for a replacement.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Absolutely. Kind of surprising when you think about it, but certainly makes a lot of sense the more that you think about it. I'm looking at the ACC. We saw a lot of coaching changes. Maryland's out for a new guy. Obviously, the University of Miami, they parted ways with Al Golden a couple months ago. I'm looking at other teams like NC State potentially. Because the ACC is so winnable and there's really only two top dogs, Clemson and UNC, I'm looking at the ACC Coastal Division to perhaps have the most movement of any college coaches, just because I think everybody says, well, if we're able to jump up into this third or second position, we can start to get into those conference championship games, and then who knows, maybe we get onto a bigger spotlight and we're able to expand our football program. So I think those are some of the teams you should be really looking out for this offseason. Now, on the flip side, when it comes to candidates that could be filling those spots, who are some of the potential candidates floating out there that might be the best that college football has to offer?
Well, I have three. I'll just throw Lane Kiffin out there, Alabama offensive coordinator. His name always seems to be in the mix, so I won't harp on him. But two of them, Tom Herman, the Houston head coach, he's 11-1 this year, former Ohio State offensive coordinator. But it's only his first year at Houston, which may make it too early for him to jump to another opportunity. But you never know, because if you look at his resume, he usually jumps after 1 or 2 years. I know that was mostly as an offensive coordinator, but still something to look out for. And finally, Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern head coach. This guy was 10-2 this year. He has the number 13 team in the nation currently, and he's the winningest head coach in Northwestern football history with 70 wins, and he's only 40 years old. So he served his time there. He's built a program, and I think he's ready to move on to bigger and better things.
Those are some great picks. I love the love that you're sending out to Houston Headman as well. I'm going to go to Alabama's ranks as well, away from Lane Kiffin, though. There's two guys on that staff that really jump out to me. Obviously, Kirby Smart, he's the defensive coordinator there. He's a guy that could step into Georgia. He could step in for Mark Richt. He has all the SEC ties already. He knows what it is to be in the SEC, that week in and week out grind. So I'm wondering if he's going to be going over to Georgia. And then another guy on Nick Saban's staff, Mario Cristobal. He's the former head man of FIU down here in Miami. He was able to produce some serious talent for a team that nobody knows about. He was able to get the likes of T.Y. Hilton and a bunch of other guys, make that program more than respectable. He has some great ties. He played football at the U, so he might be somebody that goes to the Miami Hurricanes as a head man after being the offensive line coach at Alabama for a year. And then another guy, maybe a blast from the past, how about Butch Davis? You know, he got suspended, or he didn't get suspended, but he had so many academic scandal problems at UNC, but that cloud has kind of moved on, and he has expressed an interest of being able to be a head man once again in college football. I wonder if a guy like that has a national championship under his belt, he might be somebody that might draw some interest moving forward as well.
Yeah, I love all those picks. The only thing I ever wonder about with Nick Saban's staff members is if they'd be too afraid to join a Georgia or another SEC team. They'd be like, hey, Nick, I'm thinking about joining another SEC team. And he's like, you are not. Go sit down.
Okay, I'll sit down. You know what? You might be right. And Georgia is one of those teams that when Georgia's going right and Alabama's going right, they have the potential to meet up in the SEC championship game from the East and the West year after year. So you're absolutely right. That would certainly be stirring the pot with a little too fast of a kettle spoon, if you're asking me. That is the most ridiculous analogy I've ever made in my life. It made zero sense. Now, before we hit the break here on Sports Your Argument, we want to get you guys involved at home. So we're going to hit the break with a little Sports Your Argument trivia time. You play along at home. Hit us up on Twitter at SYA Sports Talk if you think you've got the answer. Matt, you're up first. What trivia question are you going to stump me and the rest of the audience with?
All right, I'm going to hit you up with a little NFL trivia. Three NFL franchises have had three quarterbacks with 70 wins each. Name those franchises.
Woo! That is a heck of a question. All right, if you guys are playing along at home, hit us up on Twitter at SYA Sports Talk. After the break, we're going to reveal the answer, and we've got so much more Sports Your Argument coming up after the break. I'm Casey Angel, one of your hosts for Sports Your Argument, reminding you that any time is the right time to get in touch with Sports Your Argument. Follow us on Twitter at SYA Sports Talk, like us on Facebook, and stay in touch with our show and our online podcasts at sportsyourargument.com. We're back here on Sports Your Argument. Before the break, we were talking college football madness, from playoffs to Heisman hopefuls to the ultimate prize in all of college football, getting one of those head coaching gigs. Now, Matt left us off with a heck of a question and some Sports Your Argument trivia time. Matt, lay us on one more time.
All right, so the question is, three NFL franchises have had three quarterbacks each with 70-plus wins. Name those three teams. I won't have you name all nine players because that would be impossible, but how about those three teams?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, so I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, they have Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and Bart Starr.
Okay, I'm going to go with the 49ers.
Yes, you have Montana and Young, and the third one, kind of tough, John Brody.
Oh, okay. I'm really scared about this pick, and I might sound like a homer doing it. Is it the San Diego Chargers?
Oh, it is not, but it's the Dallas Cowboys with Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, and Tony Romo.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent question.
That was great, though.
Wow. That was really, really good question. You are bringing it lately with these questions. I love it. Now, look, we got to get into some NFL headlines. Late Sunday night, the Denver Broncos, they were able to topple the previously undefeated New England Patriots behind their grinding defense and star quarterback Peyton Manning. Brock Osweiler, excuse me, in overtime, 30-24. So we all knew Osweiler had a great situation when he was stepping into it in Denver, but can the Broncos go back to Peyton after his performances?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only can they go back, they have to go back to Manning. Now, I'll tell you why. Osweiler, he's been good, but he hasn't been spectacular. Yeah, he beat the Patriots, but if you look at his numbers, not that. I mean, they've been so-so. But with the Patriots, that team was decimated by injuries. They were in the snow. It was in Denver. And not to mention tons of help from the officials. And the Bears' defense isn't exactly the Bears' defense of yesteryear. So, yes, he's done fine. But for the Broncos team, it's all about winning in the playoffs. And nobody, maybe one person because the way that everybody's so sensitive and critical these days, but no one's really going to blame them if you lose in the playoffs with possibly the greatest quarterback of all time starting. But if Osweiler's starting and you have Manning sitting on the bench and Osweiler has a bad game, that just opens it up to second guess city.
Oh, man. You know what? Of all the questions we came up with for this episode of Sports Your Argument, this one gave me the most trouble. I'm sitting there thinking, because I've been on that train and I've been harping on Peyton Manning. He's getting older. His arm strength is going downhill. But I realize what a great situation those guys are in, whether it's Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler, considering how great that defense is. It's the best in the entire NFL. And then on top of it, they have great weapons. Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas. They have great options out there as well. So it's like this, just a perfect storm of whoever you're going to throw in there at quarterback probably is going to look pretty darn good. I don't know if I would go back to Peyton Manning, but I also don't know if it matters. Like, I'm looking at these two guys, and it sounds weird that I'm saying this, and y'all can crucify me later, but the fact of the matter is, I don't know if it matters who's quarterback. I think they're going to continue winning, but I also don't know if either one of them is elite enough in the playoffs to get this team over the top. And like you said, this team's all about winning in the playoffs. This team isn't out there, you know, to win the AFC. They've been there and done that the past few years. So this is a Super Bowl or bust kind of situation. But I'm having issues with it because I'm looking at the two guys saying, I don't know if there's a whole heck of a lot of difference between a halfway injured and old Peyton Manning and maybe a guy that could be good, but we don't know, in Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's one of those things where if you're starting Osweiler, do it next year. Cut Manning, yeah. Release Manning, have his contract be up. But that way Osweiler's not looking over his shoulder when Manning's actively on the roster as second string and he throws an interception and goes, oh boy, now I'm going back to the bench.
Yeah, no, that's a great point by you, and certainly the psychology of that goes into any young quarterback when a savvy veteran like a Peyton Manning, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, regardless of timing in his career, is sitting on the bench behind you and active on the roster. Now, let me ask you this. What, if anything, has changed about the Broncos on offense? I know you were talking about Osweiler's numbers a minute ago, but with Osweiler in, as opposed to Manning under center?
Well, the Broncos are playing a vintage Gary Kubiak offense now. They're playing under center with Osweiler. It's bolstered the running game. It's helped the running game out so much that it's taken a lot of pressure off Osweiler, to be honest. They're more effective with the play-action passing, and they just seem like they're more in sync as an offense overall.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm wondering, I'm looking at this because, you know, we had a lot of high hopes with Monty Ball and Ronnie Hillman coming into the year, the kind of tandem backs that are coming out of Denver, and they've been mostly a bust with Peyton Manning there. Not under center, but like you said, in the shotgun mostly. And so now going under center, running that Gary Kubiak style of running game, running game, running game, you're right, it's really changed the way we thought about those running backs, in particular Ronnie Hillman. So I agree with you 100%, certainly has a boost to the running game. And I think that complements their defense even more because they're even more rested, and that great defense gets even better when they're not on the field all the time. So I think that you're right. It has a nice cumulative effect when they're going to the actual Gary Kubiak style of football. And I like what they've done so far there. Now, let me ask you this. We're talking about Brock Osweiler. We're talking about Peyton Manning here. How far do you think these Denver Broncos can go with Brock Osweiler at the helm?
Well, they'll certainly make the playoffs. I don't think there's any debate on that. Now, they could do that with almost anybody under center. I mean, yeah. They could have Jimmy Clausen under center, and they'd still make the playoffs.
Ooh, because Jimmy Clausen defense... just got really happy all of a sudden.
I know. He said, really? I can be a playoff quarterback? That defense, you were mentioning it, they're just so dominant that really it could be like a Ravens situation with Trent Dilfer. It can just carry him to a Super Bowl. Now, what it will be is I'm interested to see how teams adjust to Osweiler, if he'll still have the same success in another week or two, or if they hone in, see his deficiencies, exploit those deficiencies. But irregardless, I think the Broncos still better with a healthy Manning. Now, that being said, I want Manning to be healthy enough where he can play under center. He can run that Gary Kubiak offense, because what's been going on hasn't really been working. I'd probably rest Manning personally until probably week 17. I'd have him play against your Chargers, do a little warm-up game, and just get him ready for the postseason if he's healthy.
Yeah, we all know that playing against the Chargers is the perfect warm-up for any player ever right now. So, yeah, thanks for throwing that one in there, by the way. You know what? I talked about it a minute ago with Osweiler, with Manning. Every year I kind of lump teams together into different categories, and that's the way that I've always kind of thought about the NFL. And when I'm looking at the teams that can quote-unquote win the Super Bowl, the Broncos are in that category. I look around the league, there's about four or five teams, the Patriots, the Cardinals, the Panthers. You got to assume that all these teams are right there. They're in it to win it this year. I don't know if that changes. I don't know if I put them in a different category with Manning or with Osweiler. I think that if they won the Super Bowl with Manning, I think that people would be less surprised just because of the name value that's attached to Peyton Manning. But I think when it's all said and done, and if Brock Osweiler goes out there and plays decent football, I guess is the way that I would describe it, for the rest of the season, and they go out and the defense dominates and they run the ball down people's throats and they beat the Patriots the way they did with ball control offense and great defense, I don't think anybody would be surprised by Brock Osweiler winning it. I think people would look at the defense and the running game and say, man, that's a really great team that they have there in Denver. So they're still in the same tier for me. I don't think it changes much with Manning or with Osweiler. So for that reason, I'm going to say it's still kind of Super Bowl or bust, and I wouldn't be shocked by any of those results coming from either one of those quarterbacks. Now, let's switch channels here into my geographical backyard. I'm getting whiplash from this coaching carousel now by the Miami Dolphins. Now they've parted ways with offensive coordinator Bill Lazor after just two seasons. This is only a few weeks after releasing head coach Joe Philbin. So what will help stimulate that offense?
Well, it might stimulate it. They haven't scored more than 20 points in their last five games, so clearly it needs some help. But they have a couple of wide receivers who are injured. Is a different play caller going to be the difference? I don't know. He might be more aggressive, but the real question in my mind is, do they have the talent in place to be more aggressive, to make that aggressiveness effective? And that's really the biggest question.
Yeah, you know, when I'm looking at this offense, what they need more than anything is a guy, and you're gonna like this. They need a guy like Richie Incognito on that line. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest here. They need tough offensive linemen, because last year we saw Ryan Tannehill. He was sacked more than any other NFL quarterback last year. This year they can't get the running game going. Lamar Miller, he's had a really rough go of it, and it's not his fault. I mean, he's a very good running back. He just hasn't had the holes to be able to go through. He's always getting hit at the line, and he's trying to fall forward for 1 or 2 yards. But that offensive line is terrible, and it hasn't been able to really make Tannehill and that running game as well be able to shine. So I'm looking at the offensive line as really kind of, I guess I would call it the bugaboo there, you know, because I like to be Beyonce Knowles in my off time. The fact of the matter is that they need an offensive lineman, and they need more of them, tougher ones. I don't think that Bill Lazor was the problem. I don't think that he was the solution either. But it brings me up to my follow-up question here. How do these constant changes, we talked about Philbin gone, now Lazor gone, on and on, how do these constant changes during Ryan Tannehill's time as the starting quarterback in Miami hurt his future?
Well, assuming it's the same playbook and terminology, the change really shouldn't have that much of an of an impact. It's really just what plays are being called in what situations. I kind of liken it to, in the big picture, like Alex Smith, who had a different offensive coordinator every single year. And that can stunt offensive growth, not just for a quarterback like Tannehill, but for the entire offense because of the wide receivers, the line. I mean, everything, you name it, is really affected when you make that change.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Ryan Tannehill has had a terrible cloud over him with this Dolphins team, unfortunately. There's just been so many changes and so many problems, and they've brought in guys that are like Mike Wallace a couple years ago that just don't fit their scheme, don't fit Ryan Tannehill's skill set. And so this is just one more situation that's kind of indicative of a bigger problem there in Miami, where they haven't been able to bring the talent and the schematics together behind what they thought was their franchise quarterback. And I have to say, the one sentence that might be the most devastating to any quarterback: I don't think he'll ever live up to his potential. I think that he has a lot of potential, and with these amount of changes, I don't think he ever lives up to it. And I think that that's the scariest thing for any franchise when they draft a quarterback eighth overall like they did with Ryan Tannehill. Now, let me ask you this. When it comes to Dan Phillips, the intern head coach, he's a guy that's still on the ringer there for the Joe Philbin spot. What does this say about him and his future in Miami?
I think, well, this move says that he's, you know, doing the desperate diamond. If he was playing beer pong, that's the formation that he'd be going into right now. But no, I think he's done. I don't think there's any way to save this. Even if he won out, I think that he's done. Ross, the owner, he wants a flashy coach. I think he'll break the bank. And that's really the problem, is that Ross and the Dolphins remind me a lot of Snyder and the Redskins a few years ago when they're just throwing money at free agents. You mentioned Mike Wallace. You know, they spent a lot of money on him. They've spent a lot of money on Sue, but maybe not the best fit, maybe not the best sheriff in town to sort of corral all these people.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that Dan Phillips is going to be gone at the end of this year. Maybe they keep him on staff, maybe not, but I think you're right. I think that they're going to probably try to make that big splash like you're talking about, and that's a great assessment. The Redskins a couple years ago compared to what the Dolphins have been the past few years, I can't disagree with you. I think that that's a great assessment and certainly a great comparison on your end. Now, let me take the all-knowing hat, put it right on top of Matt Potter here. You get to play doctor. What do the Dolphins have to do to get headed in the right direction?
Well, we're sitting here talking about offensive problems, but the defense has allowed over 32 points per game in 4 out of their last 5 games. This may surprise you. They're all losses. And
not surprising, actually.
but really, when you look at this team, they're like a pretty talented roster without any direction. It reminds me of the 49ers before Harbaugh. The pieces are there. They have talented players. They just need to get the right head coach to come in, get the most out of the talent that they have there, and right the ship.
Yeah, the defensive amount of talent, you were talking about it, that they have there, it's really surprising because it's much better than those stats you were just talking about. You know, obviously, Cameron Wake, he's out for the year, but they had him the first few weeks. They signed Ndamukong Suh. They've got guys like Ko Amisi. They have people like Brent Grimes at corner, who is an all-pro when he's going well. They have a lot of talent there, and that points per game that you were talking about, that doesn't equate with what I was just talking about. So you're right. It's obviously a matter of getting the most out of your players and a schematic situation. So I agree with you 100%. They need to get somebody else in there, maybe somebody that's a little bit more of a disciplinarian. I didn't like the way that Joe Philbin was running the team. I thought that he was very meek and very mild. I thought getting rid of him was the first step in getting it right in Miami. But I don't know if getting rid of him, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into the season like they did was soon enough to salvage this season. So maybe they're looking towards next season saying, look, we got a lot of pieces. Maybe if we add one or two more and we get the right guy in there to be the head honcho, maybe he's the one that ties it all together and brings all those loose ends together into the 2016 season. Now, we got to talk about the Seattle Seahawks here, and it's not just Dolphins, not just Broncos talk here. The Seahawks are another team that had an interesting week this week, as Russell Wilson threw for 5 touchdowns, 3 to Doug Baldwin. Yeah, just like everybody had it scratched up to be. Plus, they lost Jimmy Graham for the rest of the season to injury as they toppled the Steelers at home 39-30. So let me ask you this. Let's talk about Jimmy Graham here for a second. Is losing Graham at this point of the season even a factor for the Seattle Seahawks, considering how they've used him so far in the 2015 season?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, just because the Seahawks were misusing him doesn't mean that he wasn't a defensive focal point. The defensive coordinators, you have to game plan for Jimmy Graham. He was double covered, which opened up better opportunities for the other wide receivers, so he definitely had an impact.
Yeah, I wonder about this. This is one that I kind of teeter on. I agree with you in a lot of facets. They mismanaged Jimmy Graham all year so much. I wonder how much it will really affect him, and certainly in the next few weeks moving forward. You're right, because he was a focal point for opposing defensive coordinators. Let's see if they're able to put more emphasis on a Rawls coming out of the backfield, or a Doug Baldwin who might have to step up. So we'll see if those defensive coordinators can kind of shift the focus elsewhere. It's going to be interesting to see what Graham was as a distraction, because he certainly wasn't much of a stat producer this year just because of the way that the Seahawks were using him. Now, let's talk about Russell Wilson here for a second. Do you think that, and you might scoff at me and you might try to punch me through my microphone even asking this one, is Russell Wilson a top 10 quarterback in your opinion, mainly in part due to the supporting cast that he has right now?
You know, when I first looked at this, I actually laughed. I was thinking, no way he's a top 10 quarterback. But then I looked at the quarterbacks in the league, and I said, yeah, I guess so. He's kind of on the back end of that top 10. And really, it comes down to two reasons. First of all, he's in the perfect system for his skill set. That defense, their running game, it just works. And secondly, there's not that many good franchise quarterbacks in the NFL right now. There's actually a big dearth of talented quarterbacks in there. So yeah, he's top 10.
Yeah, he is. It's kind of a, I guess it's more of an indictment of the NFL quarterback situation right now. But yeah, if you tell me he's 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there, I'm probably going to agree with you. So you and I are on the same page here. I agree he's a top 10 quarterback right now. And you're right, he's in the perfect system for his skill set. Now, let me ask you this. When it comes to losing Jimmy Graham, we talked about Russell Wilson here. What's the fate of these Seahawks rest of year? And what are some reasonable expectations for the rest of the 2015 season?
Well, I expect them to win 4 out of their next 5 games and finish at 10-6, actually. When I looked at that, it sounds crazy a few weeks ago, but they're making a run. They've been playing easy teams that have been decimated by injuries. You look at their upcoming schedule: Vikings, Ravens, Browns, Rams, and Cardinals. That's like a I'm trying to think of what sandwich with
some tough bread with some real gooey meat in the middle,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, some gooey, stinky meat in the middle. That's very winnable.
No, I agree with you. And I start looking around at the NFC, because when we're looking at teams that are hovering around the 500 mark, we got to start looking around the league and around the NFC at the other potential wild card teams. The Packers, they're starting to all of a sudden falter. You look around the Falcons, they've fallen off the face of the earth. The NFC East is an absolute dumpster fire. Somebody has to come out of there, but certainly not the wild card team. So I agree with you. I think that they're still in good position to get a wild card, and who knows what this team's able to accomplish if and when they're able to make it to the playoffs, because they've got all of those guys that lead their defense and their offense that have been there, done that before. A lot of them have been to the past 2 Super Bowls. So you're absolutely right. They could win a lot of these games down the stretch and make it very, very interesting coming into the playoffs. Now, each and every week here on Sports Your Argument, we got to get into the standout performances of the week from the world of the NFL, both on a team and individual basis. So let's start with team wins and losses. Which was the most impressive team win and the biggest disappointing team loss of this past NFL week?
The most impressive team win for me was the Bears over the Packers, 17-13. We all expected a bounce back game for the Packers. And Jay Cutler, turnover prone, but he played mistake-free football at Lambeau Field, a place where he's had zero success over the course of his career. Packers just couldn't get it going on offense once again, and the receiver play has just been absolutely poor. So for that reason, that's my most impressive team win. Most disappointing team loss is the Falcons losing to the Vikings. Falcons, they used to be really good at home. They used to be borderline unbeatable at home. They started off 5-0. Everybody thought that they were this great team, and then the wheels completely fell off. Matt Ryan threw two more interceptions. He's been awful in the red zone. And this season has caused some people to contemplate whether Atlanta needs a new quarterback.
Can I ask you this question before I get into it? And though, by the way, great picks. I can't argue with either of them. I got to ask you this question, and I know that you're going to teeter on the fence because I don't know if there's a real yes or no answer. Is Matt Ryan a good quarterback?
Wow. I used to think so.
Right.
I mean, he has Roddy White, he has Julio Jones, they have a decent running game, and maybe it was Tony Gonzalez all these years that made him a good quarterback.
But that's what I'm thinking. When you look around, and before they had Devonta Freeman, they had Michael Turner that came over from the Chargers, and he put up a 1,300-yard season out of the backfield, and they've had, like you said, Roddy White and Tony Gonzalez, and now Julio Jones. What is Matt Ryan? What is he? Is he good? I don't know. And I'm asking this rhetorically because I have zero idea of the answer myself. So I have no idea. It's really one of the more confusing situations out there. And they seriously do need to see what they have in him the rest of the way here in 2015.
Hey, let me ask you a completely unrelated question.
Yes, I do sleep with mittens on.
Oh, okay. Well, good to go.
Okay.
How about you guess where David Price just signed?
Did he just sign with the Boston Red Sox?
Maybe for $217 million for 7 years?
That's a pretty high price to pay for him.
Ooh, love it.
You see what I did there?
Yeah. Oh, man.
That is ridiculous. We'll talk about that a little bit later. We got to get into some Jordan Zimmerman. We'll talk some David Price here in a couple segments here. But back to my biggest team win, most disappointing team loss, Arizona Cardinals' most impressive team win. You know, 19-13 over the 49ers probably isn't going to make anybody's head turn. That was a feisty 49ers team that played really well at home. And those are the kind of games that can be trip-ups to division leaders. The Cardinals played really well, and they grinded it out. That's the kind of win that you want to see from an NFC West leading team. Most disappointing loss, Buffalo Bills losing to the Chiefs, man. You talked about the Falcons a few weeks ago. We thought they were great. The Bills, I thought they were on their way to a wild card when they were 4-2. Flash forward to now, they're 5-6, and they look like they need a heck of a lot of help in that AFC wild card race. That's a bad loss to a team that a direct loss to them with the Chiefs, who all of a sudden they look a heck of a lot better than they did the first part of the season. That might loom very large for the Bills. So I think that that is a huge loss for the Rex Ryan Buffalo Bills. Now, flipping over from team to individual performances, your best and worst performances of the week.
Okay, best, I'm going with Russell Wilson, 345 and 5 touchdown passes. Unbelievable. Needed every single one of those points to beat the Steelers. And the worst individual performance, I'm going with Tony Romo. Had 3 interceptions, a rebroken collarbone, and pretty much dashed the playoff hopes of Dallas.
Yeah, great picks. I'm going to go back to that Falcons-Vikings game for my best individual performance. Adrian Peterson, 158 more yards on the ground, kept the football out of the Falcons' offense. He's been dominant, and he's 100% the focus of their offense, and he still dominates week in and week out. 100% best individual performance of the week from him. Worst individual performance, I'm going off the field for this one. How about Jeff Fisher from the St. Louis Rams? The Rams lost to the Bengals. That's not surprising, but they got creamed 31-7, and superstar rookie Todd Gurley had 8 bleeping carries. How do you get him 8 carries for the entire game? Has anybody milked 4 good years of being a head coach more than Jeff Fisher? This guy, I have no idea why he's still the head man in St. Louis. He is insanely good at going 7-9 or 8-8. Other than that, I don't know what he's good for. And that's been Casey's corner.
That's a great point you bring up, though.
That is just a huge disaster. How do you get Gurley that few of carries against a team as good as the Cincinnati Bengals? I just don't get it. Now, let's flip over off the field into some fantasy football outlooks. You know, we might be coming into the final stretch here for fantasy football, but a lot of you are still playing for that playoff positioning. We got to make sure that you stay on top of the game, winning your league week in and week out. So we're going to talk about which player you're looking forward to having a breakout that's owned in less than 50% of leagues for this coming week. And on the flip side, what's that one top-rated player owned in 90% of leagues or more that people should avoid starting and why?
All right, who I'm going with this week is Devin Funchess, wide receiver of the Panthers. They're going up against a poor Saints secondary this week, so I think he could have a monster game. And the player that I'm sitting, you just talked about it, I'm sitting Adrian Peterson. He's going up against that Seahawks defense. Catching passes isn't really his forte. And I think the Vikings are going to have to go through the air to win. So for that reason, I'm sitting Peterson.
Great picks there. I'm actually going to go quarterback here. And what I never thought I would say, literally, you guys are going to have to drug test me after this segment. Pick up Jay Cutler. He's owned in 43% of leagues. He's going up against the San Francisco 49ers, a team that is ranked the bottom seven of most points, fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks so far this season. Since his bye week, Cutler has seven touchdowns, two interceptions, very un-Cutler-like. And on the flip side, it pains me to say, but you got to sit my boy Phillip Rivers. He's going against Denver, the best defense in the league. They're going to key on him, and that running game has nothing going in San Diego. They're not going to help out Rivers at all. I'm very, very worried about his production moving forward. Now, we're pushed up against the break here on Sports Your Argument, but after the break, we are going to be previewing every single game on the NFL docket for Week 13, so you got to stick around for more Sports Your Argument. I'm Casey Angel, reminding you to be safe this holiday season. Considering this commercial is pre-recorded and I have no idea which festive season it may be, please be careful with all of your fireworks, pumpkin, turkey, dreidel, mistletoe, and giant Easter bunny related activities. We're back here on Sports Your Argument. Before the break, we were talking NFL winners and losers from the previous week of the world of football. Now, we got to get you guys ready for every single game coming up this weekend with our Week 13 preview. We love making our predictions, but also we're going to gauge our interest with every single one of the games on an academic level because we like to keep it scholarly here on Sports Your Argument. A means that we are jacked up about it. F, not so much. So we have no bye weeks anymore, no teams on the bye week. So we got a full slate of games. We're kicking it off Thursday night, Green Bay Packers traveling to the Detroit Lions. What's your level of interest in this game and who ends up taking it home?
All right, well, I'm going to give it a B. The Packers, they need to get back on track in a hurry. We keep thinking this is going to be the week. Well, it's going to be pretty tough against those Lions. They're playing really well of late too. But I think it's going to be a shootout, and I'm going to give the edge to the Packers, 32 over the Lions, 28.
Man, this is a difficult game because we really think that the Packers, they're in there somewhere, right? I mean, I assume that somewhere they're okay, but they haven't been against teams like the Lions, like the Bears, that we think they should be dominating. My level of interest in this is an A because I'm very interested to see what Packers team shows up. I think they eke it out on the road on Thursday night. I'm going Packers 21-20 over those Detroit Lions. Now, let's get into some Sunday action. The Houston Texans, they're traveling to the Buffalo Bills. Your level of interest and who ends up winning this game?
I'm going to give this one a C+. The Texans, they've really turned it around. They look like a possible playoff team. But on the flip side, the Bills, they're kind of going in the opposite direction. They aren't that interesting right now. So I'll give the edge to the Texans, 27-24.
I'm going to go with a B just because I have no idea what these two teams are. These are two of the most confusing teams in the NFL. You talked about it. They're going in opposite directions. I have no idea what the Bills are, what the Texans are, what the Chiefs are for that matter. I have no idea. I'm going to give it a B because I'm interested to see who these teams are when they're facing each other. I think the Texans are going to win it 17-14. Now, let's go into the San Francisco 49ers. They're traveling to the Chicago Bears, another team that I have no idea who they are. What's your level of interest in this, and who ends up taking it home?
I'm giving this game a C. The only thing I'm really interested in is to see what current Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio draws up to stop his former team. And the only reason I'd be even more excited is if Kaepernick was starting, just to see that for that same reason. I'll give the edge to the 49ers. I like the way they've played recently under Gabbard. I think they're gritty, like you said. I'll go 21 over the Bears, 19.
I'm going to give this game an F because and I wanted to give it a D just to save some kind of face. But man, I can't get excited about this game. I think that the 49ers are going to win it ultimately. I've got them winning a very hard-fought game, 17-13 on the road in Chicago. But my level of interest in this game, pretty minimal, unfortunately. Now, let's go to the Battle of Ohio. Boy, that sounded better in my head than it did coming out. Cincinnati Bengals traveling to the Cleveland Browns. Your level of interest in this game and who ends up taking it home.
All right, I'm going to give this game a C-. If Manziel draws the start, which I'm hoping for, then I'll raise it to a B+, just because I want to see his bounce back, you know, if he regains the starting job again after losing it, and gain, you know, all that good stuff. But I think it's going to be a fairly straightforward game. I think that the Bengals are going to win it 28-17.
Wouldn't it be super, super Cleveland-esque if they, like, shun Johnny Manziel and he gets, you know, sent somewhere and he just becomes the next great thing?
Oh, yeah, Austin Davis, you know, he completed 7 passes. He's the next Joe Montana.
Cleveland, my goodness. There are not enough paper bags for all those fans in this world. I've got the Cincinnati Bengals winning this one as well. My level of interest is a D. I don't really care about this game. 31-20, Bengals are taking it home. Now, another barn burner of a game. I know. Calm down. Calm down. We're talking Jags and we're talking Titans. Who you got?
We have to talk about them, though.
It's technically still an NFL game. Neither one has been regulated to college football yet, so we do have to talk about it.
Okay, well then, in that case, I'll give it an F.
Good.
It's really too bad that these teams are obligated to play twice a year, though, isn't it? They're terrible. I mean, they're both coming off losses. I think the Jags have more to offer, which isn't saying much. I'll give them the edge, 24-21.
This is like, you know, you and I were talking about this off air. It's like when you're searching for a prom date and everybody gets asked out and all the Packers are gone and the Bengals have been picked. And then there are the two girls out in the corner. And it's the Jags and Titans. And you're like, well, I guess the Jags have more to offer at least. So I'm going to go with you. It's an F, but I'm going to go with the Jags because they're slightly less repulsive when I take her to the prom. Jaguars 24, Titans 20. Wow. I'm going to get so much hate mail after that. Now, let's move into an NFC West battle. The Arizona Cardinals traveling to the St. Louis Rams. Your level of interest and who ends up taking it home?
I'm giving this one a run-of-the-mill C. The Rams, they're a complete mess right now. You've already talked about Jeff Fisher. The Cardinals, they barely got away with a win last week in San Fran. I think they're going to be more focused this week. And for that reason, I think that really goes against the Rams. I think they'll win 35-13.
Yeah, I'm with you on all those points. I'm going to give it a D. I don't care that much. I also think that the Cardinals are going to wipe the floor with them 37-7. Now, let me ask you a follow-up here about the whole Jeff Fisher situation. Do you think that he survives the year? And if he does, do you think that he's the head coach going into the 2016 season?
Yes.
Really?
He'll definitely survive the year. Yeah, I don't see them replacing him. I see them getting a fairly high draft pick. They'll draft another quarterback. I think that's a tough situation because, yeah, they traded for Foles, but he hasn't really had his hand-picked guy. And for that reason, I think they'll let him go through this draft. But if next season they're just as bad, I think there's a lot of problems there.
Do you think – now, I have no idea why I'm spending so much time on the St. Louis Rams of all teams right now. But let me ask you this. Obviously, everybody knew about the Sam Bradford for Nick Foles situation, the offseason, the Eagles and Rams effectively traded starting quarterbacks. Do you think this Rams team would have been a lot better with Sam Bradford at the helm, or do you think it wouldn't have made much of a difference?
No, I do. I think they would have been much better. I think that really Foles worked better with Chip Kelly, and I think that Bradford worked better with Fisher, and I think that this is just a trying to do too much sort of deal, which they thought, hey, this will work out better, but it's a deal that really hasn't worked well for either party.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I wanted to get your take on that. Kind of my take as well. When we saw it flipped around, we thought to ourselves, well, maybe Bradford can do something well in the Eagles offense, but I think that both of them have regressed, and certainly Nick Foles has regressed immensely comparatively to what he was able to do in Philadelphia compared to what he's been able to do in St. Louis. Now, let's move on to another barn burner of a game. The Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins. Why are you giving it an A?
I feel like these are loaded questions where I'd embarrass myself if I gave it anything other than an F.
These are gotcha questions. I know what them media folk do. They get you gotcha questions. Just for everybody at home, I'm going to start leaving voicemails on Matt's phone just so he wakes up to, like, I got you with one of them gotcha questions.
I'm going to give this one an F, clearly.
Oh, really? Thanks.
Because I always try to find something that I'm interested in with each game. I'm interested to see if Matt Schaub throws more touchdown passes to the Dolphins players than Tannehill. And I think that's very possible because he had another pick six last week. He has actually a streak of pick six. I think it's like four or five games now in a row with a pick six. So I'm interested to see if he keeps the streak alive. And I'm going to give the edge to the Dolphins. Don't know why, but I'm giving it to the Dolphins 17-13, probably because they're at home.
Matt Schaub is unbelievable with his accuracy to the cornerback on all of those deep out routes. It's really, it's uncanny what it is. It's an F for me. I've got the Dolphins winning at home as well, 24-21. They are a massively inconsistent team. I think the Ravens are just terrible, to be honest with you. And I'm starting to wonder, we've had this conversation about Joe Flacco. I know that he's injured and moving forward. Obviously, they've already given him the big money contract. But don't you think he kind of ranks in the same category as a Matt Ryan, where we ask ourselves, is Joe Flacco good? And we kind of look at ourselves in the mirror, you know, like scratching our ears for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Joe Flacco is one of those things where Joe Flacco reminded me when he first came on, like an early Ben Roethlisberger. You just say, "Oh, he's safe. He's doing barely enough for them to win, and he's not hurting them." Okay, and then Ben Roethlisberger wins a Super Bowl. Flacco wins a Super Bowl with a great playoff performance, not taking anything away from him. And then the discussion goes, "Well, that was a great playoff. Have we been underrating Joe Flacco? Is he elite?" And then it's, "Well, is he elite? Is he not elite? Is he?" I don't think he is, but he's put together some nice games, but I think it's fool's gold.
It kind of is when you're looking at him. You can't go away from him because you probably aren't going to replace him with somebody that's appreciably better game in and game out. But I don't know if he's elite. I don't think he is, personally. So that's always an interesting question to bring up anytime we come across the Baltimore Ravens. Now moving on, we've got the Seattle Seahawks traveling to the Minnesota Vikings. Who you got there and what's your interest in this game?
I'm giving it an A. It's probably one of my most interesting matchups of the week. Both teams, they're playing really well of late. Should be a power rushing battle between Rawls and Peterson. Potentially a huge statement game for the Vikings, though.
Yeah.
If they're looking to be one of those elite, we're talking about elite players in Flacco. Well, the Vikings are on the precipice of becoming an elite team in this league right now. If they can beat the Seahawks, I know it's in Minnesota, but if they can beat the Seahawks, I think they go next level. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I'm going to go Seahawks 26 over the Vikings 24.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. If you asked me, Casey, you get to watch one football game this weekend, which one is it going to be? It's going to be this one. Seahawks at Vikings, a couple of teams that I picked to represent actually the two wild cards in the NFC coming into the season. Maybe the Vikings run away with that division. I still think we're looking at two playoff teams here when it's all said and done. I'm going to go opposite from you. I'm high on the Vikings. I've been picking them. I'm riding their horse through my pick'em league that you and I are, I would say, dominating, but that would be an absolute lie. But 21-13, I like the Vikings at home. The Seahawks have been borderline terrible on the road, and I think the Vikings have a nice home field advantage there. I really like what they're doing in Minnesota. Now, let's move into the Battle of Gotham. New York Jets at New York Giants, a big time, long travel day for both of these teams. What's your level of interest and who ends up winning it?
Well, it might be if they're taking the subway.
Yeah, you never know.
I'm going to give it a B-. As you mentioned, it's the Battle of New York. But I hope the Giants keep losing for the Redskins' sake. That's kind of a personal sort of reason for me to be interested in it. I think that the Giants will find a way to win, though. This Jets team, I have no idea what this Jets team isn't. I think they're starting to be terrible, you have their quarterback throw four or five touchdown passes. I mean, what is going on there? I don't even know. I really don't. Maybe it's because he lost the beard. Who knows? I'm going Giants 26, Jets 20.
Yeah, man, there are so many teams I don't know what they are. And two of these teams are playing right here. I'm going to give this game a C. I don't have a huge interest in it, but I understand why people do. I think the Jets are going to take it. I think they're consistently a little bit better than the Giants have been so far this year. And with that being said, I have zero idea why I'm picking it other than that. But I'm going to go with the Jets 24-20 over the New York Giants. Now, moving into a battle in the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons traveling to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who you got and why?
I'm giving it a B-. I'm going to go with the Bucs over the Falcons, but I'm going to look to see if Matt Ryan can get back on track. I mean, he's on the verge of being booed out of his own stadium. They're at the Bucs this week. Jameis Winston, he's going to have a better game this week than he did last week at the Colts for them to be able to beat the Falcons. But I think it's going to happen. I'm giving the Bucs 28 over the Falcons 27 in a close one.
Yeah, these are this could be really ugly football. If we're being totally honest, these two teams have the potential to play very, very ugly football. And on the flip side, they could be very high-flying offenses and could be an interesting game. I'm giving it a B of my level of interest. I'm going to pick the Buccaneers as well, 33-30 over the Falcons, a team that I think is absolute a flaming pile of garbage and might not win another game the rest of the season. And our listeners in Atlanta just dropped through the floor, unfortunately. Well, let's try to gain some of those followers back around the country. How about the Chiefs traveling to the Raiders? Who you got and why?
This is the other top game of the week for me. I'm giving it an A. It's grade A. It's like the beef, you know? It's just as good as it gets for me. Chiefs, they're on a five-game winning streak. Who knew that Jamal Charles was the reason they were being held back?
I know, just such a slouch.
yeah. Obviously, Jamal Charles was holding them back. So the game's in Oakland. I'm very excited to see how it plays out. The Raiders, as I've said many times before, still a very exciting team, up and coming. Chiefs, giving them the edge, 20-17.
Yeah, I like this game a lot, too. This is another A for me, for my interest. Old AFC West rivals, you got to love it. A couple of teams that aren't separated by much in the standings, and I think on a talent level, they're very, very evenly matched. At home, I'm picking the Raiders here to beat the Chiefs 31-28 in a very close, tough, hard-fought game. Now, let's go over to the other game featuring AFC West opponents, the Denver Broncos traveling to my boys. I said that very embarrassingly. The San Diego Chargers, who you got and why?
I'll give it a C.
You are so kind, my friend.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you. You know, I'm interested because of Osweiler. I'm interested to see, checking to see how he's doing just for the sake of the Madden storyline. But what we have here is we have a great quarterback in Rivers versus a great defense. Unfortunately, Rivers doesn't have much help around him, and by much, I mean any. So for that reason, I'll give the edge to the Broncos. I think it'll be close, though, and I as a testament to Rivers, I think it'll be close. 26-24 Broncos.
My goodness, you are in the Christmas spirit already. You are Thanksgiving praise to a team that doesn't deserve it. I don't know what other accolades. I don't know if you're going for Mother Teresa 2.0. This is an F for me. This is going to be a terrible game. This could potentially be the worst team in the AFC versus the best team in the AFC. I didn't say AFC West. I meant entire AFC. I think the Chargers will have 14. The Broncos, 101. Now let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles traveling to the New England Patriots, because I have to get that bad taste of Chargers out of my mouth. What's your level of interest and who ends up taking it home?
All right, I'll give this game a B. You have me. I'll be somewhat interested. And really, because I'm looking to see who Tom Brady's going to turn into a star wide receiver this week. This guy has nothing. I mean, Edelman's gone. Gronk's gone. Really, who? Who does this guy have left? I mean, LaFell, get out of here. So, you know, the Eagles, they're a sinking ship. Chip Kelly, is he going to still be there after this year? That's up for debate, but I'm going to give the edge to the Patriots. They're still going to find a way to score their 30 as long as they have a healthy Tom Brady. I'll go Patriots over the Eagles 31-20.
Yeah, this is a game that I don't know. I'm going to give it a C because that's the average. I'm not super excited about it. I love watching the Patriots get angry and take it out on an opponent. And after losing, I feel like they are just going to demolish the Eagles. So I think that they're going to win 38-10, and the leading receiver for the Patriots is going to be coming out of hospice care after the end of the game, as far as I'm concerned. Now, moving into the Carolina Panthers, traveling to the New Orleans Saints, what's your level of interest and who you got there?
All right, I'm giving this game a B-. Will the Panthers extend their perfect season on the road? That's the main storyline for me. And really, do the Saints have the firepower to score enough points against that stout Panthers defense? I don't think so. The Saints are very hot and cold this season, and really Drew Brees doesn't have many weapons at all around him. That defense is awful. I'm going to go Panthers over the Saints 28-21.
Yeah, this was another team. You talked about the Falcons a couple minutes ago where it was like the Falcons were really good at home. Weren't the Saints really good at home before? Like, am I just making things up in my head? Panthers on the road, my level of interest is a B because they're undefeated and because the Saints are supposed to be good at home. However, I think the Panthers take it 27-17 over those New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, it's like that division got together and they're like, okay, guys, who's going to win this year? Who's going to tank?
It's really strange.
Yeah.
That's going to be a weird division moving forward because when you look at the quarterbacks, Cam Newton kind of going into his prime, Drew Brees obviously kind of out of his prime, going over the hill with a bad team around him. Jameis Winston, he could be very good. We have no idea what to do with Matt Ryan. That's a lot of teams and a lot of flux right there, other than the Panthers, who look to be pretty complete right now. I think that the NFC South is going to be really interesting to watch the next 3 or 4 years to see who emerges and who continues to go the wrong direction.
Yeah, and the thing is that I'm not even that high on the Panthers' offense. I mean, yeah. Cam Newton, he's having a good year, but, you know, I could see a regression in place with him.
The thing about Cam Newton is that he had such a great rapport last year with Kelvin Benjamin, and losing him to start the season has put such a huge priority on throwing the ball to Greg Olsen from the tight end position. You talked about Devin Funchess as your guy to go out and pick up in fantasy, and I agree with you there. That's a guy that has to step up. So it's interesting because you talk about the defense, and obviously they've been really good for the past few years. Ron Rivera, a great defensive coordinator, has translated into a great defensive head coach. But you're right. There's a lot of question marks around Cam Newton, and regardless of what you think about him, his weapons could be very suspect at best there in Carolina. Now, let's talk about the Sunday night and Monday night games. On Sunday night, we've got the Indianapolis Colts. They're traveling to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Your level of interest in this game and who ends up taking it home?
All right. Well, I'm going to give it a C. And really, I'm looking at it because Matt Hasselbeck is still undefeated on the season. That's just crazy to me. But it's not super crazy because people forget really how good he used to be with the Seahawks. Matt Hasselbeck was one of the premier starters in the NFL. Hopefully he parlays this into a starting gig somewhere in 2016. That would be great for him. It would be great storyline for the NFL. But I'm going to go Steelers 34, Colts 21.
Yeah, that's a great pick there. I'm going to give it a C. Hasselbeck is an interesting situation. You're absolutely right. Is he a guy that steps in? Because he's obviously not a long-term solution for anywhere. But he could certainly fill in maybe for another year. You're right. Who knows where they go from here. I'm going to pick the Steelers as well. 24-21. I think they're a little bit more of a complete team right now than the Colts. A team that I can't figure out. I don't know if they're going to get appreciably better when Andrew Luck comes back, because you talked about it. Hasselbeck has filled in very nicely. I still think the Steelers win this one, and we'll see where the Colts go from here. Now, moving into the Monday night game, we've got the Dallas Cowboys traveling to your boys, the Washington Redskins. I was waiting. I was, you know, getting that one coming up out of me. Your level of interest in this game, clearly an A. Other than that, I would be very disappointed in you. And who ends up winning it and why?
It's A++, okay? Get it right over
there. Oh, okay. Just making sure. And now you have to explain why the Redskins will win by 14 touchdowns.
Okay, 14. Well, that's kind of a lot, but, you know,
thanks for the understatement of the year.
Matt Castle, he's a pick machine. We'll get some with the pick sixes. Kirk Cousins will throw some. You know, this really, the Redskins-Cowboys matchup is one of the best rivalries in all of sports. It's like the Yankees-Red Sox of baseball. I'm hoping at home without Romo it's enough to get it done. I think it will be, but these games are usually close. They're usually some twists and turns. So I'm going to go Redskins 27, Cowboys 24.
Yeah, I've got it as a B. It's always, like you said, it's a great rivalry. I mean, when the Chargers and Raiders or the Steelers and Ravens or the Cowboys and Redskins get together, you throw out the records, it's just going to be a hard-fought, emotional game on both sides, regardless of who is quarterback and who is not quarterback. The fact of the matter is that losing Tony Romo again is going to be a huge detriment to the team. We saw how different the Cowboys play with him and without him. I think the Redskins are the better team right now anyway. Kirk Cousins seems to have gotten his cleats under him, if I may say so. So I'm going to pick the Redskins to win 24-17 in what I think that will continue to sort of propel them towards that division crown and certainly could make for an interesting last few weeks in the NFC East. Now, we're pushed up against the break here on Sports Your Argument, but after the break, we're going to get you guys a little fair or foul, some war boom, get you ready for the entire sports week to come, so stick around for the home stretch of Sports Your Argument.
You're listening to Sports Your Argument, full throttle sports with just a touch of crazy. Now back to the drawing board with your SYA mad scientists, Matt Potter and Casey Angel.
We're back here on Sports Your Argument. Before the break, we were getting you guys ready for the full slate of NFL games. Now, after another entertaining week of sports, both on and off the field, Matt and I need to get to the bottom of it with a little rendition of fair or foul. I'm going to make a blanket statement, and Matt and I are going to let you guys know if that statement is, in fact, fair or foul. A game so easy, even I'm not confused. Now, number one, Kobe Bryant's retirement had nothing to do with his own level of play and everything to do with the level of play for his Los Angeles Lakers. Fair or foul?
B. Oh, I'm confused.
Wrong segment. Damn it. I knew I wasn't confused. We should have checked with you first.
No, I'm going to go foul here. Listen, the Lakers, they're not great, but Kobe's been absolutely awful this year.
Oh, don't be that guy!
Being that guy, listen, because you're not going to be that guy, I have to be that guy.
Okay, fair.
It was getting so bad that people were calling for him to sit down or retire immediately. And really what I think happened is he realized that his play was so bad that the fans would be okay with them not re-signing him again for next year. And so for that reason, I think he's retiring to save face. And it's like they say on the great TV hit show Mad Men, if you don't like what's being said, change the conversation. Ever since that he announced that he was going to retire at the end of the season, everybody's been bowing down to him. Everybody loves Kobe again. And for good reason. He should be celebrated. His career should be celebrated. But that team isn't that team's not that bad. I know they're going to be end up with one of the worst records in the NBA, but the talent is there. They just need to deliver it, and I think and I think part of that is Kobe playing better.
Okay, I agree with a lot of your points. I hate you as a person. I just wanted to let you know that right now.
That's fair. You wouldn't be the first. You won't be the last.
That's true, and you know what goes double for me is people hating me. I have to say fair. I think that this team kind of was – okay, this is going to be a chicken and the egg situation. Follow me here if you can. Kobe Bryant takes a lot of shots. We know that. He always has. However, Kobe Bryant also has been able to provide a lot of assists for these Lakers. People think that he's a ball hog. He's actually averaged almost 5 assists per game throughout his career. Now, that's not this team that he's been on. Those assists have come to Shaquille O'Neal or Pau Gasol or Lamar Odom or a lot of guys that play second fiddle to him very, very well. However, I think he looks around at this team, and we saw this the year or two after Shaquille O'Neal left, after those championship runs. He put up a bunch of shots. However, he was in his prime then in 2005 and 2006. Right now, not in his prime, obviously, coming off a couple of injury-riddled seasons. So I think he's looking at this like, I'm still in my prime, I'm going to put up a bunch of shots. And so I think that's why you're seeing just this absolute terrible Kobe Bryant that we've seen for about a year now. And a lot of it was because of the injuries. Obviously, the Achilles injury was huge. But I think that he has become a product of this team. And you're right. I am so glad that he announced this, because this is a guy that needs to be celebrated. He's the second best shooting guard of all time. Let that sink in. We're talking Jerry West, Dwayne Wade. We're talking about a bunch of great shooting guards in the history of the NBA. And Michael Jordan's ahead of him, and Kobe Bryant is number two. So he is the second best shooting guard of all time. And so we absolutely need to celebrate him. You're absolutely right. But I have to say fair on this one. I think he's a product of a bad situation. And this team is a very, very long way away. I think he realized that, and I think he looked at himself and said, you know what? I got to change the situation, and I love your Mad Men quote. I agree with you. Change the conversation, and he certainly did with just one announcement.
But let me ask you this, okay? Let's say that he was on the Golden State Warriors. don't you think that he – not? I guess I don't think that he would be better. I think that he would be the player holding the team back, whereas that doesn't really matter so much right now because of how bad the Lakers are.
It could be. I guess this is one of those hypotheticals where, man, I have a difficult time answering that one because – I know how good of a passer he is, and I've seen him, and you know everybody talks about how much of a ball hog he is, and his assists per game at right about 5, I believe it's 4.9 per game for his entire career. Michael Jordan was only about 5.3, so the difference wasn't much per game. I wonder if he would adopt something different because he's so much about winning. But I guess that's obviously something we'll never know because he's not on a team like that. But I wonder if he would adopt that kind of, you know, point forward position like we've seen with LeBron James, where he becomes a distributor a little bit more. Obviously, he's never going to be as unselfish as a LeBron James. But I wonder if that's the case. That's a great question by you, and certainly one that has stumped me, if you can't tell by my insane ramblings.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I just want him to sort of pass the torch to D'Angelo Russell, take him under his wing, and sort of the rest of this year, while he's on his swan song and farewell tour, that he just sort of gets Russell in position, sort of passes all along all the knowledge that he can, and get Russell prepared for his NBA career.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I'm sure every Lakers fan listening out there is like, yes, please, make it happen. Do it now, do it now, do it now. All right, now, up number two in fair or foul, former Washington National, current Detroit Tigers pitcher Jordan Zimmermann, your boy, well, maybe not anymore. We'll talk about it here in a second. He's not worth 5 years, $110 million. Is that fair or is that foul?
That's foul. I mean, right now he may be worth more. This seems like an extreme bargain after the David Price. I mean, my goodness. Is it a little rich? Of course. But most players, and by most, I mean almost every single one, are grossly overpaid. It's a five-year deal. He's only 30 years old. It's only going to take the Tigers till he's 35. He should still be very serviceable by then. He's as consistent as the number of hours in the day, and I think that it's very reasonable that he might end up being an extreme bargain for them.
Yeah, I like the short contract. If you had told me it was $110 million over 8 years or 9 years, I would have said, we're starting to push the twilight years here on a guy like Jordan Zimmermann. But you're absolutely right. I'm going to say it's foul, and the fact of the matter is that at 35, I still think he's going to be much the pitcher he is now. I don't think there'll be a huge drop-off because he's not that overpowering guy. He's a guy that hits his spots, changes speeds, has a lot of movement on his ball, and even if he drops 2 or 3 miles an hour with his fastball, with his cutter, I think that he's still going to be a very, very effective pitcher. So you're absolutely right. I say foul. I think that's a great bargain. And let me ask you this, since we're on the subject of pitchers, and it was the breaking news coming in at the start of the episode with David Price going, what, $217 million, signing with the Boston Red Sox, your instant analysis, if you will, just taking it off the cuff. Is that a good move for them? Is that what they need in Boston? Is he overpriced? Is he overpaid? What's going on there with you?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. He's overpriced. He's overpaid. He's one of the older free agent pitchers, although he is very consistent. He's very good. Clearly, they're getting an ace to their franchise. But my question is what is the Red Sox plan? Do they think that they're instant contenders? They must with this deal. And really, it's probably just the first domino to fall. They're probably going to be looking to add a lot more talent around that team, a team that underachieved. I think they were either fourth or fifth in the AL East this year.
Yeah, that team was really bad. Like, yeah.
And they were old bad. Listen, right. Because David Ortiz, he has 1 year left. Okay, well, yeah, his salary comes off the books, but who's gonna fill that offensive void? You have Hanley Ramirez, who was no great shakes in left field and really at the plate. So there's a lot of question marks. Pablo Sandoval, another player they overpaid for. So they have a lot of salary on the books that's not going anywhere soon. And really, that's all talent at the back end that's starting to be in the back end of their careers.
I'm glad you brought up all those guys, and I'm going to bring up all the other guys on their roster. Wasn't this supposed to be the team where coming into the season we were like, wow, guys like Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts, and even to a lesser extent, guys in the minors like Rusney Castillo and people like that are going to come up and they're going to make a real impact. And then we look around the diamond and there's still Dustin Pedroia and there's David Ortiz and there's Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez that are old and taking up roster spots. And I'm wondering to myself, because the best franchises that we've seen have built from the ground up. Even the Yankees, when they had the homegrown talent of Jeter and Posada and Mariano Rivera, that was the best the Yankees have been in 30, 40 years. And then they were able to supplement those guys once they had their feet under them with really good free agent additions, obviously. But it seems to me like the Red Sox keep blocking these young players that they could potentially develop with these guys that are older. And the thing that keeps following David Price, and I'll stop rambling after this point, and I'll listen to your commentary here in a second. But the thing that keeps following David Price is that he's unbelievable in the regular season, and he's struggled in the postseason. He did it again this postseason with the Blue Jays. Now, the Red Sox are a team that are kind of, you know, World Series or deep playoff run or bust with all these big contracts you talked about, older guys that you talked about. Isn't David Price kind of that guy that you look at and said, well, maybe he'll be great in the regular season, but maybe he's a liability in the postseason?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, if he was worried about the pressure in a Tampa Bay,
yeah.
I mean, what pressure? Or Detroit, or even Toronto, where they were just happy to be in the playoffs. If he bombs a bad start in Boston, he's going to get booed out of town.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more pressure. And I'm glad that you brought up that point about that young talent with the Red Sox, because we've seen it with the Royals. The way to win is you have all your young talent at the same time come up. You saw with the Yankees, all the young talent at the same time coming up through the system, play together, ready to win, supplement with free agents like you were talking about. The Red Sox have a problem because they're at both ends of the spectrum. You have the very old players like the Pedroias and the Ortizes, and then you have the very young players. So there's not going to be an overlap, which they previously had when they won their two World Series championships in the last decade or so. So I don't see the point. I think that this is just throwing good money after bad.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And looking at – glad you brought up the Royals. The Royals are a great team. They've been to the last two World Series. They won the last one. They beat the Mets, another team where all of their young talent came up together. And then last year, the World Series champions, the San Francisco Giants, another team with a stockpile of young talent around the diamond. It's just, it's confusing to me. I think that it sounds like you and I are both in agreement that he's overpaid, you know, overpriced for what he was, and might not be the best fit there in the Boston Red Sox uniform. Now, let's move on to number three in Fair or Foul. Latin singer Mark Anthony, yeah, that Mark Anthony, has become a player rep for MLB stars, signing Aroldis Chapman of the Cincinnati Reds. And this will start a flood of non-athlete reps in the world of baseball. Is that fair or foul?
I think that that is foul. I think that this was just a language barrier issue, really. I thought that he was looking to get a huge singing bonus, and so not a signing bonus. So that's why he went with Mark Anthony. So that's the only thing that I can think of. But I think it's a one-off scenario. It's a bad decision on his part, because players, and I know that the language barrier thing, but in all seriousness, if players are going to go out and have a Mark Anthony negotiate their contract, why can't they just do it themselves and not pay the fee that the agents would get?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about this, and you know, obviously I'm in a Spanish-speaking household here, and I understand the importance of the language barrier, especially in baseball. Obviously, it's totally different if you're coming right from Cuba, and we see this with a lot of the Cuban immigrants that defect from Cuba, the Aroldis Chapmans, the Yoenis Céspedes of the world that come over. Maybe they don't speak English, but Spanish is the second most spoken language in all of baseball. The amount of agents, the amount of player reps, the amount of players behind English, Spanish is the number two. It's not like somebody's coming from Korea or India and we're trying to find somebody that speaks Farsi to be able to play pro baseball. Signing Mark Anthony, of all people, is ridiculous. The amount of bilingual reps out there is amazing. And so I don't understand, if Aroldis Chapman doesn't feel comfortable with his English, he's not exactly in this a massive minority. There are a lot of people and more players that are coming over directly from the Dominican Republic or from Cuba that come over that don't speak English when they first get into the league. I don't understand why he's feeling like that should be the guy that he unless he loves, you know, some kind of Mark Anthony song that really, you know, he left some tunes on his message machine for a few weekends in a row or what it was. I have no idea. I liken this to when I think it was Mark Anthony and Jennifer Lopez. I believe they bought minority stock in the Miami Dolphins. And then I look at this and I think to myself, well, he's going to have a lot of impact on potentially the rest of Aroldis Chapman's career. A guy that, you know, you and I are both very high on. Obviously, one of the top five closers in the entire game. Unbelievably talented. This seems like a weird choice for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that you mentioned the diversity in baseball, which is abundantly clear. But if a team's not going to be like, oh, Aroldis Chapman doesn't have an English rep, we don't want to do business.
Right.
You know, and Aroldis Chapman, it's not on – the onus isn't on Aroldis Chapman to get somebody that speaks English to talk to these owners. The onus is on the owners to get somebody that – they can bring to the table to get a deal knocked out. So I just think I don't get what he's saying. You know, whatever. It's bad.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Now let's flip over to some fair foul in the world of the NBA with an 0-18 start under their belt. That's right. You don't have to clear out your ears. It's an 0-18 start from the Philadelphia 76ers. They will go down as one of the worst teams ever. Is that fair or foul?
I think it's fair, but it's absolutely by design. It's not like this team's trying to win and they suck at it. No. This team is brilliant, okay? I've never seen
a
franchise. It is. Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you what, I've never seen a franchise so good at being so bad. They have tanking down to a science. And look at this. I mean, they were playing the Cavs a couple weeks ago. They were beating the Cavs, and then, you know, they're leading all these good teams. And then the fourth quarter, they're like, oh, my God, we're winning. Okay, guys, back it off. And then they always lose in that fourth quarter. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, that South Park episode where they're playing Little League and all the kids.
Yes!
The best teams are the teams that are the best at losing because they just want to stop playing. This team is so good at losing that they might even be so talented and none of us know.
Man, I don't know. There is something to be said, and anybody that listens to the show knows I'm a huge soccer fan. And in soccer, if you know anything about La Liga or the English Premier League, the bottom three teams from the first division, they get regulated to the second division, and then the top three teams from Division Two get promoted. And this happens every year. So it gives a lot of incentive to the bottom teams, the 76ers of the NBA, if you will. And I look at this team, and it's fair, 100%. This team might be the worst of all time because they want to be. And you're right. I love the South Park comparison. I have seen that episode. That is hilarious. All the kids want to go home, not play any more Little League baseball. Man, I just don't get what the end game is. Like, I look at this team and I think to myself, okay, they remind me of what the Washington Wizards were about 3 or 4 years ago when they just drafted John Wall and they had some guys around the court that looked like they could start to build together. And the Wizards have done a nice job of taking steps and progressing forward each and every year. This team, I think it's detrimental to an athlete's mental health if you just go out and say, it's okay to lose. I think you start to lose guys at some point if they don't play to win. I don't know how to really describe it because I don't know if we've ever seen something like this in the NBA or in any major sport where they literally try to lose every year to get a good draft pick. And then when they get back-to-back great draft picks, Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, on and on and on, they're still like, no, that's not enough. We want 25 number one draft picks. And then they're like, hey, you can only have 13 guys on the roster. No. 25 number one draft picks is what we want. We're going to tank for a half a century. Damn it, that's what we want. This is insane to me.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. But, I mean, look at their roster. I mean, you mentioned they got Nerlens Noel. They have Embiid, okay? And they have Okafor. So, I mean, if let's say Joel Embiid's healthy, okay? And they flip him for a really good point guard or an up-and-coming point guard. And then they go out and they draft Ben Simmons. That's a dangerous team. And then I think that they would be in a position where they could just blow through the East. I mean, I could even see them being a top 4 or 5 seed in that East if they draft Simmons and get, you know, a nice point guard in place, a distributing point guard like a John Wall. I mean, they could be really dangerous.
They could be, or they just want to lose more. I don't know what they want. That's why I'm so damn confused. Now, on the flip side, number 5 in our fair or foul, with an 18-0 start, yeah, that's the exact opposite of those 76ers, the Golden State Warriors will go down as one of the best teams of all time. Is that fair or is that foul? Wow, that's the strong conviction we like in sports radio right there.
Yeah, listen, yeah, is it true? Yeah. I mean, if they keep up this pace, clearly, which, I mean, they'll probably lose maybe about 10 games here and there, maybe less. But, yeah, I think they'll go down as one of the best teams of all time. I don't think that they're going to finish with the most wins ever. They'll wear down. They'll have to rest some players. This is a team that seems to have their priorities in the wrong place. I mean, they won an NBA championship. They should be focused on repeating, not getting the most wins in NBA history. And do I think that that's their sole focus? No, I think that clearly at the end of the day, they're still trying to get that championship. But all it takes is Curry to have those ankle problems creep up again. Yeah. And really, if that happens, this is a completely different team because Curry's the heart and soul. I don't think Klay Thompson, you know, he's pretty good, but I don't think he's the end-all be-all that everybody else thinks. He's clearly Robin. There's no Batman in him. There's no Batman in his future. He's just a nice complimentary piece. He's very much a Pippin, but Pippin clearly much better. So, I think that all it takes is one wrong thing for this team to go from the best team in the league to a very average team.
And you say that you don't know basketball. Man, you are on point 100%. I agree with you. I say fair, but there's a lot of in me as well when it comes to this question. You're right. This team should be focused on the championship. I wonder if when Steve Kerr comes back, if they start to employ a sort of Greg Popovich-esque maintenance program, say Steph Curry, take it off when we're playing, I don't know, Sacramento Kings or something like that, which would be very counterintuitive to what they want, which is like scoring titles and maybe the best league record of all time like you're talking about. But I think that you're right. I think that their focus might be misplaced, and we're certainly going to see what kind of toll that takes on them going into the playoffs, which is another grueling season in and of itself. Now, we talked about an 0-18 team, an 18-0 team. So let me ask you this. The amount of parity and the level of competitive play in the NBA as it at all-time low. Is that fair or foul?
I mean, it appears so. I'm going to go true. And really, for me, it's because star players are teaming up to win championships. It's no longer our star player and our supporting cast versus yours. And really, I think that's the biggest thing. You see it with the Cleveland Cavs, with those players teaming up. We saw it with the Heat, which was sort of the start of it. We see it now with the San Antonio Spurs and the Clippers. And so, I mean, these teams, it's a team game, but really with basketball, I mean, and for decades and decades and decades before the current makeup of NBA rosters, it was really a Jordan with the Pippins, with the Kerrs, with everything like that, versus, you know, Magic and his supporting cast and Ewing and his. So, I mean, really, it's just a changing landscape. And because of that and the way free agency is, really, you have 3 or 4 super teams and then everybody else just kind of so-so.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think it's fair. We look back at the greatest teams of all time before the Miami Heat a couple of years ago, and it was, can you get 2 superstars together at some point in the prime of their career and then kind of build the role players around them? Jordan and Pippen, Bryant and Shaq. Before that, it was Karl Malone and John Stockton. I mean, you go back through it, if you were able to get 2 guys, you had a team that could go to the NBA Finals multiple times. Now it's not so much like that. And so I think that you're right. I think there's 2 or 3 great teams, quite a few that are scrambling for the playoffs, and a ton that are terrible. for my money, that makes the what seems like a long NBA regular season turn into an absolute eternity. If we were doing the A through F scholarly thing that we do, are gauging our interest like we do with NFL games and we did with NBA games, it would just be F's across the board. I mean, they're pathetic week in and week out. Outside of one or two games that's actually, you know, Clippers, Warriors, or Cavs, Heat, or something like that. Other than that, it stinks out there. And so, as an NBA fan, I don't like it. It pains me to say that. It really does.
Well, and the thing is that we just talked about the 76ers. They're sort of going about that same concept, just in a completely different way. They're not overpaying to bring all these places in because, let's face it, Philly isn't going to be the preeminent free agent destination, so they're tanking, trying to get three or four of those superstars through the draft and then build that way. So yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, but it's become a tough watch for a lot of NBA games. Now, to wrap up each episode here on Sports Your Argument, Matt and I get you ready for the sports week ahead, previewing some of the games and topics in a way that only Sports Your Argument can bring it to you in our segment, Woo or Boo. I name the game, then Matt and I are going to let you guys know if you should be excited, that's a woo, or if you should not be excited, skip out on festivities, that's a boo. I'm trying to get my best scary, spooky impression here. Now, let's go to some college football, starting off with our woo or boo. Saturday, SEC championship game, number 12 Florida versus number 2 Alabama, woo or boo?
Yeah, big time woo. I mean, even though we both think Alabama's going to win, still should be a great matchup of two preeminent teams in college football. I know Florida's sort of off the map lately, but they're having great season. Alabama, great season, so woo.
I'm going to go boo here because I think the game's going to be over at the half. I just don't think it's going to be a very good game. I think Alabama's really, really good. Wake me up when the playoffs start as far as the Crimson Tide are concerned. I think they're in a league of their own compared to the Gators. I'm actually going to boo this game, although the implications are woo. The actual matchup, not so great for me. Now, sticking in Saturday with the world of college football, ACC championship game, number 14, North Carolina versus number 1, Clemson, woo or boo?
Woohoo!
Yeah!
I mean this is like storm the court wooing for me. I mean, this is going to be a great matchup. We both talked about it. UNC, underrated, but yeah, this, of all the games in the pre-playoff matchups, this is the one to watch.
I agree. So much woo is coming out of me. I got to put on my man depends, like adult diapers or something. There's a lot of woo coming out of me right here. This is the one that you and I talked about in our first segment today. Definitely could be an upset. I think this is going to be a very, very evenly matched game. I love this matchup moving forward. Now, sticking in Saturday, another championship game, Pac-12 championship, number 9, Stanford versus USC, woo or boo?
Yeah, I mean, I like the concept of it, but I'm going to boo.
Stinks.
It stinks.
Boo. It stinks. Ugh. Let's move on. Big Ten championship. Number 4, Iowa. Number 5, Michigan State. Woo or boo?
Woo. You know, I love this game because both teams are so close. You know, it's not like Florida and Alabama, where Florida wins, they're going to be in, because that's not going to happen. But Michigan State and Iowa, they're both right there. They both had great seasons. And really, this is just where you go all in. You push all your chips to the center of the table, and winner goes on. So, I mean, really, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm wooing.
Man, you are so on point with these cliches today. I'm pushing all my chips in. I'm throwing caution to the wind, staring down the barrel of the gun, peeing into the wind, whatever you want to say it. Iowa, Michigan State, they put their hearts on the line. They have their, I don't know, I'm done with all those. I agree, woo 100%. Woo, woo, woo. I'm excited about this game. Basically a playoff game, you know, the week before a playoff game. Now, let's move into the NBA for Saturday. Cleveland Cavaliers at the Miami Heat, woo or boo?
I'm wooing this. I personally probably won't tune in because of all the great college football, but anytime LeBron goes back to Miami, plays against D-Wade, it's going to be a great thing. It's going to be a fun environment. So for that reason, woo.
Man, I am so jacked up about this weekend in college football. I do not care at all about the NBA. It's not on my radar. Boo 100%. Don't care. On Sunday, women's soccer friendly, Team USA versus Trinidad and Tobago, woo or boo?
I'm booing this for multiple reasons.
I didn't know if you were going to, you know, buck the trend and go with a woo here.
You know, anytime it's – not only is it soccer, which, you know, I'm getting more onto the soccer sort of enthusiast train, but really anytime it has friendly in the title, I'm like, boo.
You know what? I feel like you're soccer drug dealer sometimes because I'm like, hey, have you seen this about soccer? Hey, did you notice this happen? Hey, Matt, have you noticed this? Like, I should just, like, text you in the middle of the night, be like, are you jonesing for some soccer? I got a hat trick for you if you're interested. It's a boo for me as well, even though, you know, I love soccer. Don't care. It's a friendly Trinidad and Tobago. If this was Brazil or Germany or one of the big powerhouses that the United States was up against, I think my interest would be piqued a little bit. Don't really care that much. Now,
Trinidad and Tobago is greatly offended by your lack of interest.
Yeah, I'm sure that our listenership from Trinidad and or Tobago will plummet after this episode. opening this week in theaters as we wrap up Woo or Boo, the Christmas comedy slash horror movie Krampus. Are you booing or are you booing this one in the theaters?
I'm booing it. You know, I'll probably watch it when it comes out to DVD. But yeah, so I'm looking at the trailer and I was like, oh, that was my reaction to the trailer. So for that reason, I will boo, but I will give it the time of day once it hits on demand.
I don't know what segment of the population other than Casey they're going for, because I love horror movies that are comedies, like things that are really gruesome and weird that are also funny. I think they're great. However, I know I'm in the vast minority, especially when it has to do with Christmas. And you talk to people and you say, hey, what's your favorite Christmas movie? People say, oh, Miracle on 34th Street, or It's a Wonderful Life, or they love Charlie Brown Christmas, or they love... None of those things have to do with things eating children. As far as I remember, Charlie Brown, I haven't seen in a while, probably not about people eating children. So I'm going to woo it, but I understand why everybody else will boo it. I wonder if this is going to be a success in the movies. It seems like an odd situation and just kind of weird to me overall. Just strange.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I might have to pop in Bad or Santa tonight to get the Christmas season started.
One of my favorites. Oh, my goodness. I've never fornicated anybody. I'm just going to leave you with that one. Look, this has been a great episode of Sports Your Argument. Remember, you guys can always stay in touch with the show by visiting sportsyourargument.com. You can find our Twitter, Facebook, and email us there. Learn more about the show and catch up with our online podcast. Be sure to listen in again next Wednesday for your full dosage of Sports Your Argument. For Matt Potter, I'm Casey Angel.